yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent.
Hi, everyone. We're here for a little casual mini-cast today for Commander Sworn Podcast, episode 49.5. We want to do 50 right. We want to do 50 a little bit bigger, a little bit better. I think post-Gamescom, with all the new information, is going to be a great set piece for episode 50. But I'm here with my co-host, Gray Boxer. I am, of course, McBeard, and this is your weekly Gwent podcast. And we're just going to chat about this pre-Gamescom kind of atmosphere we're in right now. Gray Boxer, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's late here. We're recording late again, so we're midnight Vikings and dwarves or whatever your flavor is this week, McBeard. How's the ladder treating you?
Yeah, we're recording late, and I'm probably going to stay up nice and late because this is going to be my last chance to push for ranking because it is now Monday night at the time of this recording, and I am leaving. I'll be leaving the house in less than 24 hours for the Gamescom activities. So this will be, pretty hyped for that, though.
I mean,
pretty
that's exciting.
Yeah, it was great. And also, I got to cast half of the Gwendolyn's Open Final Four today. So that was a nice little warm up. I got really hyped about it by the end of it. I'm very, very ready to sit down kind of in the big chair for the big event. Get to see top seven players global. And I think that, I know I'm not looking at, actually, let's just look at the leaderboard right now. Those players, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them are still in the top seven with a new number one. I am Sinrise. And Jorah, yeah, so they're still in the same order, 1 to 7. They're just pushed down by the new number one, but they're all still there. And then we got a wild card match.
They haven't played,
McBeard. Yeah. Why would you? Why bother? You're going to get that border. You're going to get that top 10 border. It's pretty secure, I think. You know, we're pushing. They're breaking into 4,700 as this is coming on to 2 months now for the season. Season one, season zero. Season zero was closed beta, I guess. Season one? Yeah.
Yeah, because we're going to get some carryover into the actual full release of the game. They did confirm that we're going to be keeping, 33% of our MMR into the next season. So, yeah, I think it's pretty safe to call this season one. I don't know. It's a strange time. Like you say, a lot of the guys who are on the top for the Challenger qualifiers are still there. And that has to do with a lot of things. And I think they are playing. I was just kidding about that. But you don't really have to play a whole lot, I think, to keep your ranking there, because the K factor is so regressive at that MMR level. You're losing so much more than you gain when you win versus when you lose. And with there being no decay right now, that's kind of a hot topic in Gwent right now, is talking about whether or not there should be decay on the ladder. With no decay, they're not moving. So they could just sit there, and the people below them have to constantly downmatch to find matches and are taking an even higher risk trying to climb.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you get into the top 10 right now, especially if you're in the high end, top 3, top 5, you could probably just sit. You end up getting a good border. But there is that number one exclusive border that may get these players to play a little bit at the very, very end. Although they're prepping for Gamescom, right? They've got a lot of money on the line. Maybe a little border this time around isn't so important. They wanted to spend all their time practicing, and I can respect that. But these players have played a lot. The current number one, I am Sinrise, 1,257 victories, 1,130 defeats, over 2,000 games played. Oh, man. This guy has played a lot of Gwent. And also Lee92 Fra from Gwent's Team Italy in the TGI as well. Over 1,000 wins as well for that player. Lots of, these players have put in a ton of time. I'm sure a well-deserved break for them.
Yeah, and I think that it's a good time for them to be preparing. Like you said, there's a lot on the line, but most importantly, there's time is critical right now. It's very late in the game for tournament preparations, and practice makes perfect with tournament, because we know that the ladder does not accurately simulate a tournament setting, and there's a lot of nerves in the line, and there's a lot of differences between playing live and playing at home in your easy chair.
Yeah, I mean, in the ladder, of course, you need to prepare for what's popular. You need to anticipate seeing certain things that you know can beat you. But in a tournament, if you think that something is going to beat you, you can ban it. You can let it through and specifically hate on that list. Maybe ban another list that you think kind of is counter to your hate list. The more you greedily tech against something, the weaker your overall deck is. from a overall landscape point of view. So, you know, finding a right balance there. And then, of course, when it comes to scrims and testing, it's practicing, not just practicing that deck, but practicing specific matchups, like 100 games, Dagon versus Skellige. It's like, I want to get this matchup right. Or Dwarves versus Skellige, maybe, which is a harder matchup. I want to get this matchup right. Can I make it happen? If I can't make it happen, maybe I ban Skellige, move on. But, you know, you need to test so much. It's almost like there's never enough time for it.
Yeah, and I want to kind of break into what you were involved in today, the Gwendolyn's Open today. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. there were some bans that were available, because this is a strike format tournament that the Gwendolyn put on every month, and the you know, you could see some of the less favorable matchups being banned there. For me personally, I would always ban Skellige against my Dwarves. I don't know why, but I just can't seem to get a good win rate against him. But what were you seeing when you were casting a lot of?
Well, every player has their different kind of flavor of banning. Like, take JJ Pasek, for example. Just off the top of my head, I do remember that his you can ban. So you have nine, there's nine decks, right? There's nine matchups, sorry. Three versus three, and you as a player can choose to ban two of those matchups, and your opponent will also ban two of those matchups, leaving five potential matchups in a best of five.
Yeah.
So in the situation of the Gwendolyn's Open, JJ Pasek had Dagon as one of his decks. He didn't want to play against Dagon, except if it was the mirror. So he banned both potential Dagon matchups that weren't Dagon versus Dagon. So he knew that he would definitely have to play that mirror, but otherwise never have to play against Dagon. So that was his preference. Other players, maybe like you said, wanted to bring Dwarves, know that the Skellige matchup is a little bit more difficult, so they'll ban that matchup so they don't ever have to play against that difficult matchup. And but your opponent, of course, can ban favorable matchups on your side. It's an interesting format. I think from an ease of understanding point of view, Conquest is pretty good. We know that the Gamescom Gwent tournament, which is occurring on the 25th and 26th of August, that's this weekend, that's going to be a Conquest format where you have a best of five situation. You must win with all three of your decks. When you win with that deck, you can't play it anymore. Lots of different formats have pros and cons. I think Conquest is a very kind of globally kind of accepted format, like a default setting, I think. How do you feel about different formats? The last one being, I guess, last deck standing.
Well, specifically, I don't know how to feel about strike format every time, because I don't know that I'm able to anticipate my opponent's anticipated anti-meta or anti-tournament deck counters, and to be able to predict whether or not my deck could handle a matchup against a particular faction or leader. I'm not experienced that much with tournaments to be able to do that. I prefer to take a very consistent deck, similar to what JJ Pasek did, took for the August Gwendolyn's Open. I like to take consistent decks that I think I can understand the matchups for, and you know, strike, I do my best to try to ban the matchups that weren't good for me. Aforementioned Skellige versus Dwarves. Last deck standing, though, I don't know, I'm not super familiar with that tournament format. I don't know if you could tell the listeners about any other games that use that format or where you've seen it before, but I'd actually really appreciate you kind of talking to me about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really simple. It's kind of like reverse Conquest. It was really popular in the early kind of the beta and early stages of Hearthstone. Basically, it's where Conquest, you must win with every deck, and when you win with that deck, you can't play it anymore. Last Deck Standing is when you lose with that deck, you cannot play it anymore. The problem I have with Last Deck Standing is that a really overpowered deck can just sweep a tournament for you, and that's, I think that from a viewer standpoint and from a player standpoint, you don't really want that. If a deck's going to beat you, it beats you once, and then you don't have to worry about it anymore. It makes the ban less valuable, I guess. But I think overall, you just need to be a more skilled player to compete in a Conquest format.
Yeah, I agree completely. No, I know exactly what you're talking about. I've actually competed in one or two last deck standing tournaments without realizing it, and really in the early days of Gwent. And I like that format. Only because I end up keeping the deck as my, like, the most comfortable deck ends up being the one that I'm winning with the most. And I feel good having that deck at least as my lifeline. And I kind of like the drama of that. You're on your last deck. You're on your last life. You know, your hearts are getting emptied out as you lose with the decks that maybe you're not so good with, or you get unlucky in a matchup. So maybe your last deck is your worst deck and you don't even understand it that well. You had to net deck it because you didn't prepare this third deck, and it's your last one, and you got to, you know, do your best to make it. So I think it's a higher drama situation, like much higher drama. So for the viewers, maybe, I don't know if that's communicated as well, but I know the players would be feeling that quite a lot. But you, like you said, it does have a huge downside where if a deck is super overpowered, it's just going to, you know, it's going to end up being that deck versus that deck repeatedly.
Yeah. Also with Conquest, the one thing that's kind of not so great to feel is when you lose with a deck in Conquest, you have to play with it again. And your opponents, I mean, in some formats with locked in deck lists, your opponents just know what's in your deck at that point. That you're at a disadvantage playing that deck again in a losing situation. You don't know what your opponent is bringing. It's blind to that. It's blind to you. Your opponent has more information. So you, in both situations, it's kind of snowbally. It's always good to win, obviously, but it's the disadvantages of losing in the strike format, I think, is the least when you compare like maybe three of these formats.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that might be why the Gwendolmen enjoy using the strike format, and I think that it's a much deeper and sort of more tactical format, so it does sort of suit them. And it turned out that a lot of these matches are really, really, you know, high quality. We did see a number of mirrors, I think, but and it looks like the Gwendolmen's Open was a pretty big success for August. You had some pretty excellent casters, your own McBeard and Vishra were casting, along with Swim and a newcomer to Gwent and a newcomer to Gwent casting. Can you talk to us about, was it Luminosity?
Lysander, yeah. Lysander, no, he was good. He was, he's a little bit new to the scene, and he has casting experience, gaming experience, of course. So the Gwendolmen decided to give him a shot, and I casted a series with him as well as Swim. And I definitely think he learned a lot about kind of the Gwent scene and how high-level tournament play is played. And yeah, but it was a great event, and the Gwendolmen's Invitational Summer League is also going to continue. The Commander's Horn Commandos are actually one of the featured show matches. It will be broadcast tomorrow, August 22nd, and you'll get to see the Commander's Horn Commandos take on Fate Karma Team 3, team captained by Aya Mithranor with Aya Shuffles and Varinus. And of course, you are Commander's Horn Commandos with Delta 65 and A-. And it's a pretty cool series. You should definitely take a look at it. Some cool stuff happens in that series. And then we're playing another match. Before you see that, before this is even posted, possibly, I got to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning for our next match. It's the only time I can play it against, I believe we're Team Portugal. We're up against Team Portugal. So, you know, the time zone, the scheduling is it's tough. It's tough, but we're getting through it. And we're getting our games in. And hopefully we make you proud. You specifically, Grey Boxer.
Indeed. I was going to say, if 6 a.m. doesn't work out, to give me a phone call. So it seems like it's been going well. I think this is just a really good time for Gwent competitive, and there's tournaments happening all the time, and everyone who's getting a little bit bored of the ladder, which I'm sure isn't either of us, we both are ready for the new season, and I think so are the rest of you guys. But if you want to try out some new decks and some new shots at winning in Gwent, the tournaments are the place to go for that, so you don't run into the same 3 to 4 net decks, 20 or 30 games in a row. But there's some other new things coming. We got a new card revealed this week by CD Projekt Red, and an old friend of the show, King Blacktooth, has revealed the new Patch Herald.
Mm-hmm. And we also got a screenshot from Gamescom that actually showcases 5 of the leaders as they appear in the next build. So let's talk about that. Let's do this chronologically, though. The Clan End Crate Greatsword. You want to talk about this one? I think it's a pretty cool card. 6 strength agile unit with a 2-turn timer. When the timer completes itself, if the unit is damaged, reset it, and then strengthen by 2. So this guy is born to be at the front of a ship. Am I right?
Yeah, like what was the Titanic, right? Where you're holding your Clan End Crate Greatsword at the front of the Titanic, and you're saying never let go, great sword. Is that how it goes? No, it wasn't like that. This is a giant, Viking warrior holding what looks to me like a Dark Souls 3 Zweihänder, and it's pretty impressive. There's actually been some discussion as to whether or not the card is of the sword itself, and I think it is, because the way he's holding it isn't in a battle stance or anything like that. So I think this card is depicting the actual greatsword of the Clan on Crate. And I don't know about the balance of this card because it's not regressing McBeard, so it's strengthening every time it's every two turns. It's strengthening if it's damaged. So this is a guy you're going to drop into weather. This is going to a guy you're going to drop next to your longships. There's, you know, a little bit of self-wounding that could work with this. I mean, pulling this guy with on crate would, sorry, crack on crate would be maybe a bit of a high roll since a lot of Skellige units are six. So I'm not really sure like how you could consistently get these guys in your hand, but I think they're pretty cool. And I think they add another like really solid unit to a Skellige wounding archetype that does need some better units.
Yeah, and I think that it's a sign that love is on the way for some archetypes we've seen. We've seen like a little bit of Deathwish support for monsters, and now it looks like we're seeing some self-wounding support for Skellige. And yeah, I mean, I figure that you're going to be testing this guy out a lot because it looks like he synergizes well with boats, boats, boats. You put him on the front of Wild Boar of the Sea. You just kind of strap him right to the front of a light longship, and the clock starts ticking, and the no regressing tag is scary, because, you know, every Skellige deck has a priestess to bring this back, for sure, and it's just units that grow over time are very threatening, and units that are very hard to remove that grow over time are extremely threatening, and, you know, there's a way you can get them consistently in your hand. You put three of them in your deck, you're probably going to get one, and really, you only need one to do really well, because, of course, you have your whole other deck. You don't necessarily build the deck around this card. You build a bunch of cards to kind of support the wounding archetype, so maybe your Anchorite Greatsword goes off really well, or not. Maybe you have a Twisark Skirmisher, perhaps, Yetta and Damun coming back. There's lots of other stuff, and then, of course, there's a couple cards we haven't seen yet, so... I mean, it remains to be seen what the universe is even going to look like, but in a vacuum, I can see what they're trying to do, and I guess it's just, is it going to be balanced without it being regressing or not?
I think so. I think so, because it's a very interruptible card. The worst thing that could happen to you if you're playing against this card is you play Weather and they drop their only unit into the Weather there. So that means you've weathered an empty row or something. I mean, there's a lot of circumstances where this guy is not going to buff himself a whole lot, but critically he does reset himself. So, I mean, he's not going to be losing power. He's going to be gaining power, similar to the way, that the,
Redanian Knight,
right?
Yeah.
Or Redanian Elite.
Redanian Knight.
It is Redanian Knight, yeah. So the Redanian Knight buffs himself.
Yeah.
So you want to be weathered. You want to drop this guy into weather. But additionally, you drop next to boats. That kind of thing is very interruptible these days with the amount of movement effects that are really starting to take over in the second half of this meta.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be legit. I think that there's going to be decks that run this card. And I think that CD Projekt Red isn't out to make cards that no one wants to ever run. So I think that... even though these are previews, we don't know how it's going to settle. We've seen lots of previews that have changed, but I think that this one seems fair. Like, I feel like I can't look at it like it's overpowered, and I can definitely see a lot of application for it. So it might just be a solid core inclusion for wounding. And more bronze cards, that's kind of the whole thing, right? More bronze cards, more options, more cores, more packages to try out, you know, cards that work with other cards. You know, you put this and light longships in a deck for sure, but how you build around it from there, totally up to you. You know, at least you have cards that are going to work well together. And I think self-wounding Skellige, when it's all settled and we see the meta, it may be something worth playing. So, right on, Clan and Crate Greatsword. We love new card reveals, and we got kind of another reveal as well, as Gamescom news is coming out. Greybox, you want to tell us about the new Harold the Cripple, much maligned leader from Skellige?
Yeah, he was in need of a pretty huge buff because right now he's not really doing much for you. On the current patch, he's I think he's 3 strength, and then he deals like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 damage if each one kills the opposing unit. Is that correct, McBeard?
Yeah, it's a real experiment in how can I make this work situation that is currently in.
In other words, it doesn't work, and that's why no one plays him, and that's why his win rate is like 40% according to some stats that are published every week. So here's the deal. He's been completely modified to become Harold the Draug clone. He's a 7 strength gold leader, obviously, and he's agile like all leaders are. He will damage an opposing unit by 1 and then randomly damage 5 more times And then after that, he'll damage one more time a unit on the opposite row. I can't recall if it's the lowest strength unit or not, but I think it is the lowest strength unit on the opposing row.
Yeah, lowest strength unit. I think it's a persistent effect turn over turn.
Every turn.
Yeah, so, okay, so, man, there's so much to say about this card right now. First of all, if Harold is doing this, does Draug still do this? That's my first question.
Well, yeah, of course, McBeer does a monsters question as soon as we talk about the brand new revamped Harold Skellige leader card.
I'm just curious. Sometimes we see effects switch around, so I don't know. Maybe that's you can glean some information from this. Mm-hmm. But it's also interesting. And in the little preview video, King Blacktooth showed this video, and this video, I believe, I'm not sure where the footage came from, because I was, you know, I've been doing a lot between the casting today and just getting myself ready for my trip. I've been in a little bit of a bubble today, so I think I missed a little bit of news. But it does seem like, Harold is just like a value play and like an ongoing threat, sort of. And I think that's pretty powerful. I think that you play a 7-point card that does 6 damage randomly, plus an addition. So 14 points immediately if it doesn't kill the target that it's across from, and all of that damage has a home. So 14 points is pretty high. I mean, it's like near Radovid levels, but it has a persistent effect, and where Radovid also has synergy. Sorry, Radovid has application with locks. I always look at Harold and Radovid as similar cards because they're both kind of like big damage cards that do stuff. So I think Harold's at least on that tier. But outside of just like big removal, we saw Axemen in that video. I mean, Axemen are still going to be around, it looks like. How do you feel about, what do you think about new Harold generally?
Yeah, I think it'll be solid for Axemen. And I've seen a good bit of discussion on the multiple discords regarding, you know, where he's going to fit. And he's good, right? He's solid. And he's going to provide a lot of value if you've got a couple Axemen on your board. But Harold has always struggled with deck consistency. And I think that, you know, it's a very draw-dependent deck. And it lacks the ability to, you know, be a very efficient deck without Bran or without Croc to guarantee you some draws. So I think at 7, though, he's really 7 plus 6 more plus whatever ceiling, you know, and then he synergizes with the Axemen. So there's a ton of situations where the lack of consistency will allow you to kind of high roll with Harold and just crush opponents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going to have to watch out for him on the ladder. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, depending on whatever deck comes out with the changes and with the new cards, I think that Harold just probably just looking at it now, high tempo play early round one to take it, much like, you know, playing like Madman Lugos to remove a unit or playing Philippa Elhart to remove a bunch of stuff. Harold's going to kind of be that. And you have him in your pocket, though. That's the extra important thing. You always have him to use him, and he's going to get you a lot of value and persistent value potentially as well. So that's pretty cool. We did see four other leaders shown in a screen. Basically, it looked like it was the deck selector, and these decks were available to be played at Gamescom, special Gamescom build. So just going along here, so we talked about Harold. Bruver was changed as well. So Bruver can now play a silver unit or a bronze dwarf unit. So less likely to be bricked. Otherwise, you'd have to be almost at the verge of being bricked probably to choose the bronze card. But, you know, bronze dwarves are very good, especially in a dwarf deck. Right now, Ethna is amazing for these decks because she has so much utility with replaying spells. It's hard to imagine that even with this change, Bruverhoog would be better for dwarves. You've been playing a lot of dwarves as well, Grey Boxer. How do you think about this change? Would you switch your leader to Bruver?
Well, it depends a lot on what's maybe going to change with a new patch, and we don't really know everything yet. We've seen some talk of the, you know, with the word alchemy, the tagline alchemy appeared on Vesemir's new refreshed golden card. And so I wonder if alchemy is going to be something specific to potions and that sort of thing. So if alchemy is specific to potions, can Ethne reuse potions, which are one of the main effects that you're using Ethne for in a lot of these decks? I don't usually do that, actually. I use Ethne with Alzer's Double Cross quite a lot in order to be A, efficient, and B, get those the dwarves moving out of the deck, as I usually have to. So she's, you know, Ethne's very good right now because Ethne's coming out down as a 5. Bruverhoog is still a 4 and is going to give me a bronze dwarf, I don't care. I can get a bronze dwarf out with Alzer's double cross and buff it, and Ethna's a 5. I think that Bruver at a 4 isn't going to convince me on the current patch to touch him, even if he had this new ability. So I think that Bruver Hook on the new patch is going to be very interesting if Ethna has also been changed. But as it stands right now, if I had the new patch Bruver Hook, I'd still be choosing Ethna.
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting idea that if special cards were changing in ways that some interactions are now limited because, you know, we saw Vesemir playing alchemy cards and only alchemy cards. Perhaps Ethna is restricted in a way that maybe she can only play certain kinds of cards, because right now you said it. Ethna is amazing. She replays Alzir's double cross. Very valuable. She replays Commander's Horn, so you can play two Commander's Horns at once. She can play Skellige Storm twice. Like, really strong, plus Sasuke on top of all of that. Not that Bruver would not have that, but it's hard to not pick Ethna, because there are some special cards that are just awesome when you attach a 12-point gold double body to it, you know? Like, Bruver's just not going to get there. But we'll see. Aerodin, same ability, but Aerodin's been nerfed to 4 strength. He's currently 5, so they've just nerfed him. I can't think of why. He's definitely not the most popular monster leader, and arguably not the strongest monster leader. Why? And I mean, they nerfed Wild Hunt Hounds in the patch previous to this. I was against that at first. I understand now. But the nerf, Aerodin is getting hit with a nerf again, and I really wonder why that's the case. I can't, without seeing the full picture, I'm not okay with it, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, it is hard to justify considering how powerful Bran is these days and how much his power has crept up as decks have been more refined and more efficient. Aerodin's experiencing the same thing, McBeard, where you're playing a Frost deck with these Hounds, and you're able to play Aerodin into a Navigator, into a Hound, into a Frost. Mm-hmm. And that is probably something they want to kind of curb. An 11 strength card plus Frost is kind of a lot. And that's what I've been seeing on my side. So I can imagine, it would be 12 strength plus a Frost right now in the current patch. So they've knocked that down to an 11 by nerfing Aerodin down. I don't really have a problem with Aerodin at 5. I don't really see why he's a 4 either. But it could be perhaps that there's a general change overall to balance weather and how, you know, pervasive weather is right now, and how popular Dagon and Aerodin are, specifically Dagon. And here's the thing, is we don't see what the changes, if any, have been made to Dagon. So it could be that they're hiding the ball a little bit, being that he has consistently been the most powerful and popular leader card for what, the past 4 or 5 weeks now.
Yeah. I mean, for the past 4 or 5 patches now.
Yeah,
Don't you dare nerf Dagon. Don't touch him.
You can't keep him, you can't hold him down.
Yeah, I know. And the nerf to Aerodin doesn't fill me with joy as far as monster diversity. But you know, we're only getting pieces of the picture, right?
Yeah.
Emir was changed as well. Emir still 6 strength. It's weird now. What's the difference now? You play the card and then you pick the card back up again. So you can't play him like pick it up, play it again. So that's a nerf, right? I can't really see how this is more beneficial.
It's a nerf, and it requires you to sequence plan a little bit better, because Emir right now works like old decoy. Like, you just put him down, then you put a card back in your hand, and then you can either replay it or play another card. Mm-hmm. What Emir is doing now is kind of, do you remember when they changed Ermion to when you played Ermion, you'd have to discard 2 cards before he'd draw 2?
Yep.
They're sort of doing that with Emir, where they're making you play a card before you can pick one back up. And what if you have a card you really don't want to play, or you can't play, you end up with a dead Emir. So like I said, if you have a Scorch, it's going to hit your own guys, you know, those kind of situations, your Emir is going to really mess you up. So
yeah, I mean, having a dead Emir is, I suppose, always a possible problem. You probably want to build a deck that avoids that as much as possible.
We'd hope so, but yeah. This is a sequencing choice, I think, and it's also a slight power nerf and a requirement to sort of be more tactical with Emir. I don't see it really as a huge nerf to him. It's going to make him a little bit more awkward to play. And I think when you're starting the new patch with your Nilfgaard decks with Emir, you're going to want to practice a couple games, I think, to get used to it.
it slows down what Emir was good at doing, and that's replaying very strong silvers whenever he wants. And you didn't always replay the card you picked up. In fact, you know, I don't think you usually did. But in a lot of cases, like with the Mill Emir deck, which was popularized during Gwent Together, and you see it here and there since then, the most popular play for that deck was demoting Avalok, playing Emir to pick him up and then drop him again, and then also doing the decoy on it as well, and you know, bringing it back into play. You know, you've already played it once, and I think
it's silly abuse.
It changes the sequencing for that kind of play, in that you would be able to pick up Avalok and replay it, but not in the same turn that you played Emir. So I don't know if it really changed in a round where you have the flexibility to go through two turns after playing Emir or a turn after playing Emir. It seems like it would balance out to be the same, but it definitely limits some of the snap interactions that Emir has with cards like Avalok.
Yeah, you have to make sure that if you want to play, you know, Peter and then Scorch and then Peter again to kill somebody's, you know, like three captains, but you have a unit that's kind of, you know, a high strength unit on your own side, you have to sequence it better now, because you can't play Peter twice in a row and then Scorch the last one. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Where you have to
change a little bit.
You have to plan, and like I said, it doesn't work like old Decoy used to do, where it would basically pick it up and put it back in your hand, and then you could play it again. It doesn't work like current Decoy does either, so that's kind of the whole gist of it, is that he's slightly different. He used to basically be a golden Decoy, and now he's just a little bit different. You have to play the card from your hand first.
Very interesting stuff. Last leader we want to talk about, I think this is maybe the most interesting one here. There's something about this that I find very interesting. It's Radovid that's shown. He is shown as a 5-strength leader, same ability, deal 4 damage to 2 units and lock them. Still doing Radovid things, but with a key addition, he is now a crewman, which is very interesting, because is this CD Projekt Red saying Radovid is now your machine leader?
Well, we know that a lot of people are playing machines with Henselt right now, because he's so splashy, and he's also very good for round one if you want to get all your sergeants out or something. Machines are starting to be featured in the upper ladder Northern Realms decks, and it could be that Radovid is just what they need to be a little bit more consistent and not lose to insane carryover dwarves or something like that. So Radovid having crewmen just makes him better and more flexible. I think that this is a more important buff than buffing him to 7 strength even. I think that you'll get even more value out of it, provided you're using a machines deck. So Radovid never struck me as the machines leader. That was always full test, especially in Witcher 3, except that, well, Witcher 3, the only leader was full test. So yeah. You know,
he seems
he's
a machine leader too, right? Just kind of based on the, like, look at the intro of Witcher 2. You get everything. You get your reinforced trebuchets, your ballista, you get your siege towers. It's all there. Full test, I feel like, would be a great machine leader, lore wise.
Yeah, but he's stuck being the most boring leader ever. So
yeah,
they're just punishing him for his scandalous relationships with family members, like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, well, and full test, you know, way to die. Way to die, full test. Well, I mean, it's interesting because it looks like they're trying to just expand a little bit more with the crewman tag in Northern Realms. And, you know, it's just interesting. They could have added it to any of the leaders, and they chose Radovid specifically. It's just, I don't know, it's interesting. I feel like, there's a lot of great machine decks you can build with Radovid. Radovid is a bit more controlling, much like what we talked about with Harold the Cripple, that he has a lot of ways of shutting down important priority units, as well as being just a value play right away. 13 points. So, wait, is that right? That's 13 points.
Yeah, he's 13. Yep.
Yeah, 13 points. So, it's, you know, you usually get what you want from Radovid. It's very rare that you can't get the 13 points, and usually you'll take a lock here and there, depending on how greedy your opponent is. Having those locks always showing is great, and controlling with machines is a thing that is done right now. You know, between I've run a couple machine lists. I don't know if Radovid was always my leader, but he would be now if he's the crewman king. So sometimes it's just good to get that crewman down right away. But Radovid isn't the leader that does that. I feel like I'm just having a hard time reconciling that Radovid is the machine leader, since I want to play him later. Not necessarily like Foltest being the machine leader makes the most sense because I'm playing him right away.
Yeah. Well, in Radovid, you know, you'd think lore-wise and flavor-wise that Radovid would want to deal with more sadistic sorts of treatments, you know, if it's special card Lashing or something like that, you know, special card The Rack. I mean, these kind of things you would expect out of Radovid, whereas you mentioned the entire beginning of Witcher 2 is an introduction to the machine cards in Gwent, and Foltest is there walking the siege towers with you. So, you know, it's interesting to go down this road, and I think it's just the beginning of trying to make machines work again. And it might just be that Foltest right now is just really balanced, you know, even if he's not very you know, interesting or tactical.
Yep. Deploy, make your deck better.
And I'd like to interject here and add a little bit of something that I think that if we're going to see a lot more special cards, which we will, because we only have half the Gwent cards we're expecting to have in the next 6 months or so. I wonder if they can do something with these special cards to make them almost more, I'd hate to say faction specific, but that's sort of what I want to see. Like, I would like to see Lacerate be a monsters only card, or Manticore Venom be a monsters only card. And it doesn't need to exist the way it is right now. Obviously, it'd be overpowered to let monsters have everything and Lacerate. But they do sort of have that already with Water Hag, where it's, you know, it's a very monstery sort of spell, right? And a couple spells have better flavor for different factions, or at least for specific cards. So I wonder if there's a lot more we're going to see in the future, at least, of faction-specific spells.
Yeah, I mean, faction-specific special cards have been... I mean, every faction has a silver card, but no... I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, no bronze specials faction specific?
That there are none, is right? Correct.
Sometimes you forget things here and there. They make so many changes. I've said it before, Gray Boxer, we have had to forget far more than we have had to learn, as these patches are large, sweeping brushstrokes into the overall picture of Gwent that we're eventually going to see in launch when it's all assembled and we're playing Gwent on release. So these changes are, you know, now that we're going into our second major tournament, major is kind of CD Projekt Red back tournament, and we are 2 months after the public beta. These changes are arguably the most critical changes, in that final decisions are being made to a game state that is going to be kind of committed. We might see one more season. I mean, who knows really, but we might see one more season and then we could be ready to go. I think we're waiting for other modes, you know, other features, UI improvements. We know the friends list is coming, which looks amazing, by the way. You saw that video, right? The friends list, the social feature video. Such a great video. It was just very well done. I mean, I love UI stuff. I like quality of life improvements, and that's what this is.
Yeah, and I think I've had a lot of talks with other friends of the show and friends of mine, you know, specifically talking about that I think that the UI could use a good bit of an overhaul and an improvement, and they've made a lot of strides since then. But even so, you know, the game is a beautiful game. The card art is unrivaled, and the lore I think is one of the deepest that you could have in a card game, and they really stay true to it. So if they can make the actual functionality of the game more intuitive and pretty, I think that we are sitting on a blockbuster.
Yeah, and if they want to give the deck builder a revamp like they're doing for the social, please. I'd be okay with that.
All the deck builder.
The thing is, the client's functional. You get the job done, right? But when they're approaching the social tab, and you know, the friends list used to be you have to go through GOG.com, and you know, if you can't connect, sometimes it's hard to match up. You know, people who play in tournaments a lot have to go through these woes of just not being able to actually start the games that they need to play, technical difficulties. So I'm sure all of that is addressed in the in-game feature where you can add friends, chat with friends, challenge friends, and it's good. It feels like it's a part of the game. The previous friends thing with GOG.com, while it also did work sometimes, it just never really felt like it was part of the game. So awesome upgrade, and more upgrades to come, you know, when they have the time and the resources. I'm sure a lot of people would like to see Deck Builder updated, and good things coming for Gwent. I mean, what else can we say?
Really, I think that we'd probably like to end the show out, sending all of our love and good lucks and break a legs to McBeard, who's going to be casting the most, I don't know, most recent and excellent tournament coming up, the Gamescom tournament. It'll be cast by you, Mega Mogwai, and Merchant, the three M's. And I just want to wish you the best of luck, man, and I'm really looking forward to it. And you've really come along quite a long way since our first episode almost a year ago.
Almost a year ago. So Commander Sworn Episode 1 was released on September 9th, 2016. And we're coming up. And this one, I mean, we're counting this as a 49.5. We just wanted to have a little chat before I went away. It's better than this sounds terrible to say it's better than nothing, but we don't want to leave you with nothing. We never do.
So, we are the Weekly Gwent Podcast.
We are the Weekly Gwent Podcast, you know, and I'll be talking to a lot of people while I'm traveling. You know, I'll see who I can get on tape for the episode 50 Super Show, which has we're not sure when that will come, because after Gamescom there is going to be a lot of news, and then I am going to be remaining in Europe to attend a wedding, because you guys know I attend a wedding like every month, it seems like. But I'm attending a wedding in Europe, and I'll be back at the beginning of September. I would like to, I mean, this a lot of the stuff I do for the podcast I can do while I'm traveling, so there will be something to come out for sure to listen to. I will promise you that. But maybe we don't put too much of a label on episode 50, but there will be a massive episode coming. If it's not next episode, I'll give you some goodies for sure from Gamescom. And of course, you know, I'll be with Merchant and Mogwai. So we're going to get up to trouble right away, I'm pretty sure. And then we're going to all get together for dress rehearsal on Thursday, casting Friday, Saturday. Big, big news end of season on Sunday. And then who knows what's going to be coming for the rest of the week for Gwent. Maybe a patch. Maybe all the info should be out there. We're going to have to try to talk, Gray Boxer, you and I. I'll be away, but we're going to have to make it work, I think, because there's going to be so much to talk about. And it's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. So, well, and you're going to have part of the 100 beers I'm supposed to have with Merchant the next time I see him. So you guys can get started on that number. I'm going to need you to start... you know, taking those bottles off the wall and throwing them back for me.
If we can share the load, we can do 100, no problem. Merchants doesn't stand a chance.
Easy peasy.
All right. So just, you know, thanks again very much for joining us today on this episode 49.5 mini episode. As all of our casts, of course, we are, once again, we are supported by our commandos, our patrons.
Commandos!
Yeah, there you are. Patreon.com/CommandersHorn. Thanks for supporting the content, keeping the podcast ad-free, keeping us coming back week after week to proudly represent the community with the best content we can. And we hope you enjoyed this casual chat, this pre-Gamescom casual chat with me and Greyboxer. Follow us on Twitter for all updates about the show and any future stuff while we're on the go here, at CommandersHorn. And of course, you can always email us at CommandersHornPodcast@gmail.com. Greyboxer?
And you can find me on Twitter at GreyboxerGwent. I am posting pictures of the eclipse because there was an eclipse today. It was a pretty excellent sight to see everybody going outside and people trying to take cell phone photos. And I actually managed to get a pretty decent one. So check out the Twitter for that or Gwent content, you know, whichever you prefer. You can find me on Twitter at GreyboxerGwent. I'm on Twitch and YouTube as GreyBoxer, but I haven't put out anything recently. You can find me on the official Gwent Discord. Go to Reddit, the invite link to the general Discord. I'm a moderator there, and everybody's super friendly and loves talking Gwent. And McBeard's going to tell you where you can find him, and hopefully some travel video blogs.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be posting some vlogs for sure. You can find that at c/McBeard on YouTube. I owe you a lot of travel vlogs. I did one when I was in Austria, and then it got really busy. Like, man, oh, man, this has been the craziest month of my life. It's not slowing down anytime soon since I have like a 6 a.m. match for the TGI, and then I'm getting on a plane, going to Poland, practicing, trying to get my rank for the end of the season. I'm in the middle of the fire right now, and you can find me talking about all that on Twitter at McBeardCH. On Twitch, I am McBearded. It's been difficult for me to find a moment of time to give a respectable length stream. I'll see if I can fit one in before I leave. Thanks so much to all of my subs and friends that are very understanding at my sparse streaming schedule for August. Should be a little bit more low-key in September, he says confidently. We'll see. we'll see if that's going to happen. But, you know, I'm trying to get my rank right now. Gray Boxer, I know you're on the Grandmaster grind. You're always out there on Discord. You're chatting Gwent. We are just always busy with Gwent stuff. And it feels like we're just about to hit another huge, huge moment for Gwent. So what a time to be alive. Thanks so much for joining us for episode 49.5 today. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. And so until next time, this is Gray Boxer.
And this is McBeard.
Best of luck
on the path.